It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
You are the kids, the gods, and the legends. He is Jay King from The Athletic. He is Brian B. Robb from MassLive.com. I am Sam Jam Packard, and together we are Still Potable! Coming to you live. This is the Monday free episode you are listening to. For the rest of the week, we'll be on patreon.com/stillpotable. We are a daily Celtics podcast. So if you like what you are hearing, please go subscribe. If you want to be a kid for just $5 a month, you can get 2 more episodes per week. If you want to be a god, you can get every single episode Monday through Friday. And if you want to be a legend, you can join the show and basically be here recording with us. Those are all of our options. Fellas, 1 week down, I think we've done amazing here at Still Potable. The Celtics, I would say matching our energy, have done pretty well in their first week with 2 wins. First over the Knicks in New York on opening night, and then winning the home opener against the Heat. I think it's a fine opportunity for us to break out a little case of the Potable six-pack. B-Rob, your first opportunity to join us in a Potable six-pack, where we'll be drafting the 6th most interesting, most amusing, most just things that stood out to us about the first week of Celtics basketball. I have no idea how to start the order. Does anyone have any strong feelings about who wants to go first?
We now have 3 people in the Potable six-pack. This is new.
This is wild stuff.
B-Rob, how do you feel to be entering your first Potable six-pack? Do you have butterflies?
I mean, it's an honor. I mean, I have butterflies too now because, as you just pointed out, I only get you had 2 chances here. You better bring it. With a six-pack with 3 people, I mean, with 2 people, you got 3 chances here. With just 2 now, it's a lot of pressure here.
Well, B-Rob, we'll let you get first pick, so you can either go first pick and then final pick. You could go in the middle, or you can get that rebound snake 3-4 pick. So we'll let you pick the order.
Ooh. I'm going to go second. So give me 2-5.
All right. I haven't thought of anything yet. So Jay, you're up first.
Derek White's chase down block. You can't top that. Nothing from the first week topped Derek White twice chasing down Jimmy Butler for a chase down block. It was magical. It was rare. There aren't many point guards who can do that. And Derek White is just probably the best shot blocker, pound for pound, athleticism for athleticism in the entire league. So we're going with Derek White's chase down blocks. His game against Miami was awesome and kind of just a reminder that, yes, they cleared a path for Derek White to be part of the closing lineup, and that could be a very good thing for the Boston Celtics.
Has he been the second best player on the team so far through 2 games? Ooh, would you guys
I say? Love that question.
I love the power rankings after 2 games.
I mean, we're going to do a depth chart later. We'll figure out what day of the week we're going to do that, but that's going to be a regular feature.
Gotta
here.
Got to have the B-Rob.
I'm throwing it out now.
Has he been the second? Probably.
Just these
I don't
two
know.
Games,
obviously. Kristaps was incredible in game 1. Bam kind of took it to him a little bit in game 2, although Kristaps still did a lot of things to help the Celtics. Yeah, maybe Derek White. I don't know. They have a lot of good players.
It's It's not an easy choice.
Their top six is pretty good.
It's pretty good. See, this is where you messed up, Jay. You focused too much in on the chase down blocks where you could have just taken the totality of Derek White, because I think it's just him having the ball in his hands at the end of the fourth quarter in both the Knicks and the Heat game is just going to be pretty important for the Celtics. We saw just like some two-man action with Tatum and White as well down the stretch of that Miami game. But him becoming the point guard and him becoming kind of a go-to guy, an aggressive shooter in those situations, I think is just going to be super important for the Celtics, just so not everything falls on Jason Tatum's hands in the closing minutes.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge for them to have, especially after losing Marcus Smart, and Jrue Holiday can do some of it too. Just someone who can orchestrate the offense in those moments. Because Kristaps is like, he's going to help things in those moments, but he's not going to be the guy initiating the offense. He's not going to be the creator for people. So putting the ball in Derek White's hands can be a very good thing sometimes, especially when the matchups dictate that. We've talked about this a lot, but it's going to be really hard to have good defenders on every good Celtics player, like probably pretty impossible for most lineups. So Derek White could be the beneficiary of that. And I still think I did right picking just the chase down blocks because those were the most memorable part. And it allowed us to talk about everything else he's done too. So shout to me, pat myself on the back. I disagree with Packard as usual.
Seems like you're just disagreeing to disagree there, but we'll move on. B-Rob, your first pick, your first ever Potable six-pack pick. What are you going with number two?
I'm going with crunch time offense. And I think, I mean, you touched on a little bit there, Packard, with White being more involved here. But when you talk about things starting this season as well as possible for the Celtics, having them have like two convincingly like solid performances in crunch time. And the Knicks was like a tremendous performance in crunch time to last. Coming down from six on the road with 4 minutes left in the game. And then obviously against the Heat made a little bit of run in there, but they were able to hold them off quite nicely in those games. And those are, to be honest, like when they went down by six in that Knicks game, I'm like, this is done. Like they're probably going to lose this game. This is a game that more often than not last season, they would, you know, just kind of fall apart at that stage of the game. So the fact that offensively they're executing well at these points, defensively, I think they've been solid communicative there, not a lot of breakdowns at these point of the games. And so you put those factors together and with the question marks we had about this team going into the year, I mean, it's just two games, boys, but pretty good start in that area.
So I don't want to be super argumentative tonight.
With that being said, here's why you're an asshole and you're wrong.
No, they were 24-13 in crunch time games last year.
I know that number. That's a fake number, Jay. That's a fake number. Like a lot of those crunch time moments.
Like that's real. And granted, they were ahead in some of those games, but that's like the real number.
When you're up by 15 and a team cuts it to five late and you get a win because it's a crunch time in the last, like I haven't looked that up, but I think it was a lot of those wins were a lot of like those type of games in my mind. When you looked at the games that were like tied down the stretch or coming down from two or four down the stretch, I don't think they had, I think they were closer to like a 500 team realistically last year. I mean, this is me totally based on feel here, but I think there were paper tigers in the crunch time front last year.
I, as the neutral party in this hit dispute, I'm going to have to rule on the side of B-Rob because he said he knows ball and he has the eye test and Jay's being a nerd and relying on the numbers. And I feel like in this instance, we're going to have to go with knowing ball instead of being a nerd.
Anyway, I do think the closing lineup the Celtics have now should be much better than it was last year with Derek White, with Jrue Holiday, with Kristaps Porzingis. Like, Kristaps should solve a lot of problems for them. And he wasn't even in the last 3 minutes, 18 seconds of Miami game because he fouled out. But he's just going to make things so easy. In the New York game, you know, they doubled Tatum, left Kristaps open. He spotted up like 7 feet behind the arc and just canned a three. And the ease with which he shoots, the difficulty that he how difficult it is to close out on him. Like, Kristaps Porzingis just changes a lot of things for them, I think, in that closing lineup. So I agree they should be better. I'm just not ready to say after two games of, like, they didn't have much crunch time against Miami. That wasn't, like, a super close game.
Also, the process against Miami, like, they weren't doubling Tatum as much, and so I think they're doing a lot more switching. It's not like they had amazing possessions. I think they knocked down some difficult shots, like that white pull-up three. I think Jalen went one-on-one a couple of times. I don't think there's, like, amazing kind of process offense. Like, you got to give them credit for, like, we talked a lot before the season, like, how are they going to respond to kind of adverse situations? And obviously making up six against the Knicks, and then they dealt with, like, the Heat going on a couple runs to tie the game. I think they responded well, but it wasn't like they were the Harlem Globetrotters out there in each of those clutch time situations. So,
I mean, this isn't a beautiful game offense here. Like, what's like this offense has a lot of work to do, but it also didn't crumble. And I think that's progress. So that's my pick. But yeah, there's clearly a lot of work to be done. And I guess it's just more reflective, like, everyone kind of contributed over those two games combined when you look across the board. And that's, I think, a nice change of pace for the team compared to a predictable closing lineup or closing options last year.
That is fair.
All right, let's take a break here to hear from our sponsor, FanDuel. Score early this NFL season with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets with any winning $5 moneyline bet. That's $150 if your team wins. So if you've been thinking about joining FanDuel, there's no better time to get in on the action. The app is easy to use. There's a wide range of betting options. You can do spreads, player props, over-unders, and much more. So visit FanDuel.com/Boston and kick off the NFL season. FanDuel, the official partner of the NFL. Massachusetts 21 and present. Hope is here. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame moneyline wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com, gambling helpline ma.org, or call 1-800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234. And now back to the show.
My pick. I'm shocked this fell to me. Obvious number one, obvious first round pick. Jason Tatum added 12 pounds in the offseason, and he's going to make it known.
How could we not know that was coming from Packer? He says this every 5 minutes.
But it's, like, noticeable in terms of just, like, how he's playing basketball. Anytime Quentin Grimes is on him, he's going through his chest and going to the rim. Jaime Jaquez kind of dealt with the same thing. It feels like it's – I was talking to my buddy Caleb today about this. It's like, did they need Sam Cassell to just, like, let Jason Tatum know that, like, the post game was an available option to him? Like, it is kind of funny to me. It's like now he's just suddenly attacking and being – that much more aggressive in the post. Maybe it's the addition of the 12 pounds. He feels a lot more comfortable, but that's been something that's very noticeable to me in the first two games. Is like in a cross match, in a transition situation, Jason Tatum is looking to post smaller guys up and beat them to the rim and is having tremendous success while doing it.
I could be wrong, but I think part of that is just Joe Mazzulla's willingness to throw it in the post too. He was very good when he got the chance in the post last year. He's always had post moves, even though he's never been this strong before. But, like, I think going through the playoffs last year as a head coach sort of taught Joe it's not always about getting layups and threes. Sometimes you have to find a way to slow the game down and get a bucket and get rid of some of the variance that comes with creating so many three-pointers. And posting up is one of those ways. And you can draw free throws. You can, you know, get to 6 feet and get a bucket. And I think there are a couple games in the playoffs when I'm thinking of game two, especially when Jimmy Butler hit them with like three straight post-ups and helped the Heat win that game while the Celtics kept launching threes that were pretty good looks, but they missed them all. And if they had just gotten a couple looks from down low in that sequence, then maybe that whole game flips on its head. So I think part of it too is just the way Joe is looking at this is about more than the numbers. And I think a lot of his coaching last year was dictated by, will this boost our efficiency? Will this be the best like shot by the numbers that we can get? And in the playoffs, like, as he said, that shit goes out the window. And sometimes you need to just be a bully. And I think, like, right now, I don't love all the decisions Tatum is making from the post. I think he should probably pass out of there more often. But I do think adding that to the Celtics repertoire and making that a bigger part of what they do is going to be a huge change for them when it matters.
36% of Tatum's shot attempts through two games have become within 3 feet. His career is 24% in that area. Small sample size alert, but using those muscles, like getting the post to make the drop step, get in a close range there. But I agree with Chechu. Like, he's also had some bad turnovers and like is questionable shots from that front. But I think it's a good sign that he's doing
just,
it better.
It's not even just the like that he's posting up. It's like the way he's posting up is trying to go through some of these smaller guys. It's like
he's just diesel. He's like just trying to bully people, just plow them.
And it's like certain matchups where he's like, automatically, I know, Grimy, like you're not stopping this. Jaime Jaquez, who's much bigger in person than I was anticipating, but Jason Tatum seemed to have no problem kind of go right through him. And I think the offense and the spacing obviously makes it a lot easier for him because he's just, there's going to be less help defense. But yeah, the 12 pounds of muscle, kind of an obvious takeaway. You two should have taken that well with your first picks, but you're not as good at this game as I am. second round, first pick, Jam Packard on the board. Multiple places I could go here. You know, I'm a dynamic thinker, but I'm going to go with Kristaps Porzingis.
I'm a dynamic thinker. I just want to pause and note that Packard said that about himself.
Yeah, I think many people had noticed that. I just was able to put it into words for them. Kristaps Porzingis, just the defensive experience in general, because this, I think, is both a positive and then I think there's like, if there maybe a negative or some cause for concerns. Obviously, he did a lot at the rim against the Knicks. He had some nice blocks against the Heat as well. He's a clear, very good rim protector, but it totally changes kind of the style and way they're playing defense. And there's a number of possessions, especially when the Heat kind of climbed back into that game, where they were just taking advantage of Kristaps Porzingis being in a drop, basically having Bam set screens. Tyler Hero got a number of just open threes coming off screens that way. I think Duncan Robinson got some threes that way. Then Kristaps also got in some foul trouble with, I think, some lazier play in transition. But it definitely, having him on the court creates this point of attack. Definitely not at the rim because he's shown he's good there. But there's just a way for, if you have someone like Hero on your team or someone who can just come around a screen and knock down a shot, it's just a way for teams to attack the Celtics that seemed pretty open, at least in that Heat game on Friday night.
Yeah, this is going to be a huge storyline to watch all year against those type of teams, and particularly in the playoffs, first and foremost, because that's where teams are going to attack it relentlessly when he's out there. So, yeah, we've seen some good, we've seen some bad. How much he adjusts, how much the ways the Celtics as a team and Porzingis himself find a way to kind of cover those areas and get better there over the course of the regular season is going to be an interesting subplot. But there's without a doubt that's like as big of an X factor as anything right now, like from a playoff standpoint of this team.
I thought him fouling out actually kind of helped the Celtics defense down the stretch, like then bringing in Horford. It just wasn't as obvious as a place the Heat could try to attack. And so I'm curious about how that kind of this Missoula approaches that down the stretch. Cause I think Horford out there is probably makes them, I guess in some matchups, a better defensive lineup of being able to just switch more. But Jay, what do you think of, like, how big of an issue is it Kristaps playing drop coverage, and how much of a weakness is that that teams can exploit?
I don't think it's that big a weakness. He's shown the ability to be flexible. The bigger piece for me in the second game was that Bam was able to use his physicality to put Kristaps in some tough places. And that's where the Celtics will need to kind of figure out how to use Kristaps. Like, it could be just you put Jason Tatum on Bam Adebayo and you live with whatever post-up Bam gets, and you have Kristaps play whoever the worst guy is. And so I just think they're going to have to figure out how to utilize him best. Like last year in Washington, they used him a lot on the least threatening perimeter guy and just had him roam off sort of in the old Robert Williams role that the Celtics used. So maybe he's not the guy to be the primary defender on a Bam Adebayo. And so, but I just think that's something that they're going to figure out, like sort of how to tailor things to his strengths. And I think he has a ton of strengths. Like, he's super mobile for a 7'3" dude. He's had some plays where they've switched him sometimes in some key possessions, and he's looked okay in those. One against Jalen Brunson where Brunson got a layup attempt, but it was kind of a tough attempt because Porzingis impacted a little bit and he missed it. So I don't know. I'm more optimistic about the first two games of Kristaps Porzingis' defense than pessimistic, because like his gifts and what he does well, he's very, very good at that. And you just have to figure out how to build around that. And I think something that they'll find it's pretty easy to build around, especially when you have Derek White and you have Drew Holiday, like two guys who are as good as anybody at just avoiding screens and catching up to guys and impacting shots from behind the play and stuff like that. So I honestly think their defense to me has been like just awesome. And I don't think it's been tactically perfect all the time. They're allowing like 46% three-point shooting. That will go down. That's probably a little bit unlucky in some ways, but I just, the purpose that they've played with and the amount of options that they've shown they have is just really impressive to me. And I don't think they had really this mindset and the sort of like ability to really disrupt an opposing team for most of last season. And I think they have that now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, I'll take care. We going number five here?
Yes, sir.
All right. I was going to go Porzingis. Packard, you stole it from me. So I'm going to go Jaylen Brown, offensive fit, if you will, here. I think that's like, not a fit, just the adjustment period for him of being a clear-cut number two option last year, taking over 20 shots per game, to now, with the big contract, with Porzingis and Drew Holiday and the starting five next to him, like him A, finding his spots, and B, timing out those spots, I feel like, where last year it was clear cut in a lot of these games that the team needed him, wanted him to take 20 shots per game. And now we've seen both sides of it. We saw in New York, I think, where he kind of forced things a little too much at times. But then we also saw the best of him against Miami, a team that he always, I feel like, eats their lunch, at least in the regular season, and still being able to get to the rim and be a tough shot maker and really carrying them next to Derek White in a lot of the second half of that game. So I think it'll be interesting to see. I mean, it's a team-wide thing offensively with that group with the new starting five, but that's one that I'm very curious about to see how that kind of falls into place, how much those shot attempts per night fluctuates, how much he is willing to defer on nights where he might not have or just might not have the best matchup. So that's just a little area I'm going to be watching closely.
And it probably helps that he just signed a $306 million contract.
Right.
Like if it was this year that he was up for a possible contract extension and he needed to make All-NBA to qualify for that, it could be a totally different vibe. Just because then it's screwing with your money and it's probably tougher to fit in that regard. I thought it's funny because the New York game, he threw the two terrible turnovers late. And one of them was just an awful pass to Jalen Brunson. The other was like just a careless inbounds pass when he and Jason Tatum both acted like, why would anybody be full court pressing right now? like guys, it's the fourth quarter. Maybe be sure about this. But I just thought that game, I was so impressed by the fact that he only had, 11 shots that game? And he wasn't forcing shots, and he was making the extra pass. And that, to me, is the important part. Forget the other stuff. It's like all that other stuff will come. He'll get his shot attempts. He'll get his chances. He'll figure all that stuff out. As long as he's willing to have 9 shots in the game and still make the extra pass, that's the most important part. And I thought he showed that in the New York game. And obviously, it's game 1 of 82. And maybe that changes if, you know, we get through half a season and Jalen is 4th on the team in shot attempts or 3rd on the team in shot attempts, which I don't think he will be. But I actually came away from that New York game, even though he had those huge stretch of 50 seconds that was just abominable.
He had a rough first half.
Jalen brought the right mindset, the right approach to this. And if he does that for the whole season, then that will work out perfectly.
I think, it's interesting just to go from 11 shots in that first game to 22 in the second game. The thing, he had those – my memory of the Knicks games is that he had just had a lot more turnovers than those two, but I was just looking back. He still had 4 in the Miami series, and there's – to be a negative Nancy – there's still something going on with his handles where it feels like he just gives up the ball too easily. That being said, I think he had some nice – he's just gotten way better at finishing in the paint. I think that was one of the major things he got better at last year, and he showed that in the Miami series, especially finishing with his left. And so I think it's going to be very interesting to see just how teams play the Celtics, because I think the Knicks gave Tatum so much attention that they let Kristaps kind of – beat them, and then Kristaps was kind of the obvious guy. The Heat did a little bit more switching, and it became kind of one more one-on-one basketball, where I think, frankly, Jalen's important just as a guy who can go get a tough bucket, a guy who can get you that tough, two, a floater, a leaner, or finishing in a lane. With his left, he does have a left hand. I also think it was super badass for him to take that 3 at the end of the game just to seal it when he didn't have to. He could have just ran the clock out. But taking the wide open 3 and draining it to seal the game was a cool move by Jalen.
It was a great game. It was a great finish by him in that one. That second half, Derek White got all the accolades, but Jalen was made a ton of huge shots, and that one being the biggest, obviously.
I'm going to go with the last pick in the draft is offensive rebounding. Joe Mazzulla is focused on offensive rebounding. They are, through 2 games, just 15th in offensive rebound rate. That doesn't look great on the surface. But they were so bad last year at that. And you can just tell from top to bottom on the roster that everyone is tracking down offensive rebounds more than they did last season. O'Shea Brissett came into the second game, totally changed the game around by being an offensive rebounder. Jason Tatum has been physical on the offensive glass a couple times. Derek White had a play where he just really boxed out from behind. I don't know how you could really describe that.
How else would you box out? You can't.
You box out from in front. Usually you're in between. And then Al Horford has hit the glass guys who typically haven't been great offensive rebounders in the past are making a conscientious effort to do it now. And you can just tell that Joe Mazzulla has emphasized that from day one. He knew that they were really bad at that last year. He knew that they needed to find more ways to win other than three-point shooting. He knew that with Robert Williams gone, like, somebody needed to get them second-chance points. And I just think that that's going to make a difference. And Brissett, like, that's a new pickup personnel. And he's going to make a difference there when he plays. He won't always play. But I just think it's the mindset that Mazzulla has put into the guys to go get second chance points. And you can just tell, like, there's a totally different focus there than there was last season.
Without a doubt. I mean, and Brissett, I know it's just one game, and he had probably a relatively forgettable preseason overall. I mean, just preseason, but he definitely didn't stick out of that, you know, 9 through 15 pack, if you will. But just looking at him, like, the team needs a guy like that, I think, off the bench. If you want to be an offensive rebound, you need a guy like that to get after it. And no knock against Luke Kornet, but from just a balance perspective, from an energy perspective, from a defensive versatility perspective, Brissett gives him a lot there. And also, to Jay's point, just buys into the, you know, feeds into the offensive rebounding that they want there. So I'm curious to see, you know, I'd expect to see him on Monday night for sure, but I wonder if he can kind of carve himself out of like a regular role as the ninth guy here going forward, if he can kind of build on what he did on Friday night.
Do you think they're more willing to crash the glass and kind of maybe give up more in transition because they have Derek White, who's so good at chase down blocks? Do you think
that's at all? Just setting it up.
Factor that in.
Yes, that's what it's all about.
Because that would make sense to me. You got Derek White, you got Drew Holiday. Like, let's send some guys forward because we have these guys moving back. We haven't seen them get, like, burned in transition too much. I don't think transition's really been – it's been an issue in the past in games where you think, like, oh, they're not really, like, locked in. And I guess that's true always. But we haven't seen them kind of be punished for sending anyone forward. It's actually generated a lot more possessions for them. I got an honorable mention. If you guys some honorable mentions,
let's hear it.
Joe Mazzulla throwing some curveballs out there just in like the end of quarters. He'll randomly just go to an aggressive zone, or sometimes it was just the full, like the three quarter zone, 2-2-1 zone, or sometimes it's just Kristaps jumping out on trying to trap on a pick and roll. I just like the defensive changes, especially at the end of quarters where it's kind of chaos and he's just trying to create, you know, show up a different look and just make it teams not comfortable. He said he was going to do it, but it's just something I've noticed in the first two games. It's like they're trying different stuff just to throw in there on defense, which I just think is like, one, just exciting to watch, but I think it's just like a way to like, you know, maybe you steal the final minute of a quarter here or there. And it's just cool that they're like working on that and putting that in the bag.
Agree. I got an honorable mention. Are people talking about Drew Holiday enough? No one picked him here in that six pack. Flying under the radar.
Yeah, we didn't even discuss Drew Holiday.
We didn't even discuss Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday, pretty good. Pretty good. not a great player. Good basketball player. Good fourth option. Kind of got sneaky close to a triple-double on Friday night against the Heat, 19 points, 10 rebounds, 7 assists there, and a couple nice little mid-range jumpers along with another great block we already talked about there. But, yeah, I just think, you know, it didn't take long to see why you push your chips in on a guy like this in terms of fit, especially next to Derek White here. It's just like you look to see the chemistry build between those guys, but so far so good on that front.
And I think the other part of Drew Holiday that probably sometimes goes unspoken is that he just doesn't care about scoring. He doesn't care about, like, you can tell he just came into this like, what can I do to help the team? Oh, you want me to guard Julius Randle even though I'm a point guard? Sweet. Like, I would love to do that. You want me to score 9 points in my debut? Like, that's cool too. I don't need to take a lot of shots. And so I think just his ability to kind of fill in the cracks where they need it is huge. And when you have so much talent around you, and he was an all-star last year, like he's a super talented guy too, but I think his ability to come into this new situation and not necessarily need the ball all the time, not be the guy running a ton of pick and roll. Like last year, I think he was 19th in pick and roll possessions used, including passes. And like, he was up there with like some superstars. And this year, he's not going to be close to that. And I don't think he'll care, which is just a huge thing for the Celtics. And part of the reason why they were so adamant about going to get him was because they knew whatever they need him to do, he's just going to want to do that and help win it.
Do you have an honorable mention, Jay, to make it a potable nine pack?
Because
we can talk about Sam Hauser's absurd shot against the Knicks on opening night. Just one of the worst shots taken, still burned into my brain. I don't know why. I don't think it deserves to even be an honorable mention, but I was just trying to think back about what happened.
Tatum's error deserves to be honorable mention. That was the real absurd shot. He was so wide open and just took his time and wasn't even close.
Surprise, open as will be all year.
I preferred that one than Hauser's. Sorry.
Sorry, I'm just, you know, just trying to hold everyone accountable here. Hauser's main job is to shoot, and he did it very poorly. Any other things to mention? Like, should we do a look ahead to the week? I don't even know how we would do that. We're playing the Wizards, the Pacers, and then the Nets.
Kristaps revenge game against the Wizards. The Danilo
Gallinari revenge game. The Muscala revenge game. Muscala revenge game here, too. Come on.
How many points does Jordan Poole – no. We don't know how many points because it could be 50, it could be 10. How many attempts does Jordan Poole have? Is it over, under? I'm going to set the line at 24 and a half.
I mean, Derek White or Drew Holiday is guarding him, right? So
under attempts.
Yeah.
That's a lot of attempts. I'm going way under that. 19?
Let's see what he's got through two games here. He is attempting 20.5 through two games. So I think that's a good number.
And one of those games, they got blown out, so he didn't even play like the fourth quarter.
He's getting them up, though. There's
a chance. Yeah, I think the pace is going to be high. Their defense is quite bad. You might see the Celtics score 150 points tomorrow.
This could be a mismatch. Should be a mismatch.
Could be a mismatch. Does Denny Avdija get at all visibly upset at what Jordan Poole does on Monday?
That'd be the Denny Avdija versus Jordan Poole feud so far is just a beautiful thing in the making.
I love that they signed him to an extension like right after that blow up too, in terms of like where the team's like maybe stands on that front, even though I mean Poole signed long term too, obviously, so but yeah, that'll be that dynamic all year long.
That's the core,
right? That is the core. That is who they got locked up right now, so it's that'll be a fun one to watch. Probably maybe the only reason to really watch this team on a night to night or week to week basis.
Before we go, has there been any other stuff in the NBA that you guys have been watching that has caught your eye? Anything that you think you have a podcast platform now to talk about it?
Chet is cool.
He is cool, and he's a good poster. Just like he got some good tweets out there, just asking for the right amount of blocks. He's got a kind of weird facial hair, and I like just how kind of angry he seems when he plays.
That's all I got.
Bucks got smoked at home tonight.
Chet is cool.
The Bucks did get smoked at home tonight. Funny you should mention that. And Damian Lillard, after scoring so many points in the opener, I think he only had three in the first half, did not work out well for them.
I also – some of the resting stuff is getting embarrassing. Already, like, second, third game of the season, guys rest. Jimmy Butler missed, I believe, the third game of the season. Joel Embiid was like, he ended up playing, but was initially expected to miss the home opener for rest. Like, it's embarrassing. And the NBA has gone out of its way to try to stop that. And it's just not getting any better.
Yeah, when it's starting in the first week, I mean, I don't know if you even throw the Suns in that category of Booker and Beal. I mean, Beal's.
Yeah, I think they're actually hurt. So I.
It's tough to go with that, but I agree. It's like, yeah, Embiid, especially our home opener, like you said, like what are we doing here? But that's, again, this is what the NBA is going to have to up those fines or do something else here if they want to figure it out. But this is, it's here to stay for at least some of these teams.
Speaking of the Sixers, I also have to shout out them just leaving James Harden on the tarmac. That's just like imagining him there with his rolly bag and just being like, nah, man, you can't get on the plane. That was a funny image. And just some, you know, some good old fashioned Sixers schadenfreude here. If there's not any other all-wide, league-wide observations or honorable mentions, I think that's going to do it for us, folks. If you enjoyed the pod, check us out the rest of the week. This is the Monday free pod, but we have four more podcasts on the Patreon, patreon.com/stillpodable. Subscribe today, become a kid, a god, or the legend, and join the ever-growing Still Podable community. We got a chat on there that is always popping off during the games. So if you want to join and kind of talk Celtics with us, get some little behind-the-scenes looks, or get your mailbag questions or things like that referenced on the podcast coming up this week, please subscribe and join the Still Podable family. That's the end of the podcast. I got nothing, folks.